And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got another loaded show for you on, doesn't feel like Thursday, but it is Thursday. Yeah, we're already rounding out the week. Silly underdog picks. Review, make our new selections coming up at high noon. The GM, Floyd Reese, in the second hour of the program. We'll wrap things up. We've been talking to Elliot Friedman in all of 2020. We're going to wrap things up with some good hockey discussions with him at 1 o'clock. And, of course, getting ready for Titans and Texans this Sunday. Yeah, it's quick turnaround, and they're going to be right back at it, putting their 4-0 record on the line against a division foe. Darren McFarland here. Down here in Rutherford County, a beautiful day down here in Smyrna. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville. Hopefully he's getting the same weather over there. Chase McCabe in parts unknown, somewhere in Middle Tennessee.
Bellevue,
west side, while Elijah Campbell is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Doing well.
You're right, Darren. The Tuesday game speeds up the week. It's like, wow, it's Thursday.
Yeah.
Boom.
I know.
It's kind of a good feeling.
I would have to say most had to have that take, right? We all kind of went, oh, yeah. Like at some point you went, oh, yeah, this is Thursday. I know I did. I was like, you know, what do we do? I was thinking of stuff last night, and I was like, okay, so what do we do? And I was like, oh, yeah, tomorrow's Thursday. It's just been all thrown off, which, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Look, am I willing to go on the record right now and say that's the last Tuesday game the Titans play this year? No, I'm not willing to say that. I think there's a real shot it's the last one, but this is the direction.
May not be the last one for the NFL.
Oh, I don't think there's no doubt it's not. I mean, I think we may be already getting ready to see that in Atlanta because the Falcons have shut things down, and Falcons-Vikings may indeed be on Tuesday night. I mean, I don't think there's any way around it. We've been talking about this, and it was smooth sailing for 3 weeks in the NFL, and we were like, okay, when's it coming? And it's been rocky ever since. And we kept saying, all right, when's it going to happen in the SEC? It's been smooth sailing. When's it going to happen? Well, it's happened. Missouri and Vanderbilt, no-go this weekend. Florida LSU, no-go this weekend. And the game of the year to this point, Georgia-Alabama Saturday night, that is the college football game of the year to this point, without a doubt.
Yep.
Hands down. And now we've learned Alabama's AD Greg Byrne and their head coach Nick Saban, they both have tested positive. So what does that mean for that game?
Well, it could mean a lot of things. Listening to a lot of the comment about it, guys, I got a little short in my cord here.
Yeah,
if I hit it a certain way, and we have a glitch. But maybe I should stay off of the Zoom calls with Mike Vrabel to avoid being harassed for poor equipment.
Well, you're not being robotic, so you're okay.
Well, I do need to talk to some of my colleagues about the fiber because whatever date it was I got it, what was it, about a month ago that I got it, I would have absolutely been in that position if I had asked Mike Vrabel a question. I could have had the Robo Wyatt, right? There was a couple yesterday. That was kind of funny. But
that came about from an after-show meeting, which that was brought into question.
It was. It was kind of like,
you know what? Life has been so much better.
It has. It really has.
It's like, get with the times. Get with the times, guys. But I listened to a lot of the commentary about Nick Saban, and apparently he's asymptomatic, and they are going to see between now and game time on Saturday, if he gets a certain amount of negative tests, and maybe they can say it was a false positive. I don't know how all that works. He's going to try every avenue, I'm sure, to get on the field. But as it stands right now, he will not be allowed to do anything after the clock hits 90 minutes before kickoff. In other words, it's not like he can't even zoom in or whatever during the game. He can do everything he wants remotely up until 90 minutes before kickoff is what the rule is. Because then officially the referees take over control of the game. And then after the game, he can resume whatever. So this is an interesting one.
So I mean, could he not do like Hugh Freeze did last year with Liberty and coach from a booth? Like in a, you know, I mean, he was in
he
a
did,
hospital.
That's a great question. I didn't think about that. When I was watching, I was watching Heather Dinich, and she was the one that was kind of laying all this out. So That's a really interesting thing that I guess did happen. I don't know. So is it an SEC rule? I don't know, because he was the coach at Liberty.
If there's anyone that could pull something like that off in the SEC, it's Nick Saban. I mean, I had this vision of he would have somebody on the sideline that had a TV on a cart with a camera with his face on it, marching it up and down the sideline. Yeah. And I wouldn't be shocked by anything for him being a part of that game. But that's, I mean, could they not? I mean, you could be isolated in a booth.
I don't know if him showing up to the stadium on the premises is going to be allowed. But
no, I probably won't. But
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no on that. But it is a good example, and that was Hugh Freeze had, like, what did he, like, had knee surgery or something, hip surgery, and he was up in a booth.
He was in bed. He was in a hospital bed.
But he was in a – right, but he had, like, knee surgery or hip surgery, something where he could not walk up and down the sidelines or stand on the sidelines, so he was up in a suite or a booth calling the game. But to your point, I mean, I know that we would never, ever talk about broadcasters being able to call games remotely. I mean, that just doesn't happen. Oh, wait a minute. That happened all 2020. We've seen you cannot do press conferences – you know, remotely. You cannot do that. You have to be in person. Oh, wait a minute. Well, that's been going on, too, all 2020. So why can't he call it from home? Could he not do it from home?
And why, and if he can, technologically, and wants to, then I don't really see what would stop him from being able to participate in whatever way he could. Right? Under the circumstances, there's no reason he shouldn't be able to if they want to try to pull that off.
He could designate somebody to basically act as the head coach from a calling timeout standpoint, interacting with the officials.
Right.
Have that
a point that, man.
Right. That has that title on the sideline, but allow him, because it's 2020, allow him to communicate with his coaches and be a part of the game. Have a war room at his house or whatever with multiple monitors, and he can see things. He can talk to the coaches. I mean, there's no doubt they could pull that off if the SEC will allow it, which, quite honestly, I think they should.
Why wouldn't they? Well, what's
– Darren, how many times have you asked why?
Yeah, but what rule is there in place that says a coach can't do that? I mean, I can't imagine that there's ever been a rule that they sat down and said, no, wait a minute, guys. There's ever a global pandemic, and one of the coaches tests positive – we need to make sure we put in the rules. They have to be there, or they cannot participate in this game, right? I mean, there's probably nothing in the written language that says you can't do that, because who would ever think of that, right? It would be absurd before the year 2020 to ever even think about something like that. So what would be in the bylaws of the SEC that Greg Sankey could say, now, Nick Saban, remember, turn to page 36, 78.4, that rule says you cannot coach remotely. You know, I mean, I don't know how he could, I can't imagine there's something in place that would prevent him from doing
that.
Well,
I thought that's what Willie was just saying, though, that there is something in place, which I agree, I'm with you. I don't understand why he can't, but.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. This is still fairly new, this news, so. I think we're going to learn more in the next 24 hours as to how to proceed. Everything happens for a first time, and so you have to tackle it as it goes, right?
This is the way I feel. Either Nick Saban is going to be a part of this game, and therefore it'll be played, or if Nick Saban is not going to be a part of it, they're not going to play this game.
Bingo.
Those are the options.
Yep.
Those are the options. Either Nick Saban is going to be a part of this game and we'll be watching on Saturday night, or he won't be a part of this game and we'll be talking about a rescheduled date. That's the way I feel.
Why is it that distinct in your mind?
Because this game is way too big to have the biggest coach in college football not be a part of. You think
he's not going to miss it?
You think you're going to play the biggest game of the year and not have Nick Saban, arguably the greatest college football coach ever, on the sidelines, but you're going to play it anyways? No, that's not happening.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think, in fact, that was just for comparison. They had a discussion this morning. This would be interesting to get Paul Feinbaum's take on it.
We should get him on.
We should try to
get him
on.
Ask him.
Oh,
Elijah,
we do have him on
during the break. Can you try and get him?
Just See if we can call Paul.
Yeah, I got his contact. It's no big deal.
So
Darren,
I want you to pose that to him because that didn't come up. He was on a panel, as you can imagine. They were all over this story this morning and had this discussion. The question was more, if he is not in full, you know, full identity on the sideline, right, and he's compromised in some way and can't be there in full form, and it's a really close game and Georgia wins, how does the committee consider this game when it comes time to decide the playoff? That's a really interesting question. That's what they really fixated on. They didn't really fixate on, would you move the game because Alabama doesn't have their coach?
I don't believe there's any scenario. I'll bring this up to Paul. Okay? I'll bring it up.
I thought your internet went out for a second,
Paul.
Darren. I thought you were going robo, Darren, when you said that.
Or I was freezing and it just kept saying that.
That's what I thought.
I don't believe for a minute they play this game without Nick Saban involved in the game. I just don't. They're not moving forward without
You're saying
Nick
not
Saban.
On the sideline, but just being able to be in communication.
Take part in this game somehow, remotely or however they come up with, whether it's in a booth. I don't believe for a minute he's going to be on site. But if they can't figure out a way for him to be a part of the game remotely, I don't believe at all.
I agree with you.
Virtually, however you want to phrase it, I don't believe for a minute they play this game Saturday night.
Nate asks on our text line, how would the SEC monitor his feed of the game? They could cheat in some way with it. How could they cheat?
How could they cheat?
They're using headsets all the time. I don't really see how they'd be able to cheat. I mean, sure, the SEC would probably – well, do they monitor headsets as is? I don't think they do.
I don't know.
I don't know, though. I don't know the answer to that, but I wouldn't think so. So, I mean, it's just like talking to a coach up in a booth.
Well, the NFL didn't monitor headsets either till they were forced to.
Right. Well, that's a good point.
In Foxborough.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, well, we got to watch these teams. They may be doing silly stuff. No, I don't think that's an issue. We'll just ask Paul Feinbaum. Let's get him on. Let's do that next.
Let's get him on.
You know what? That's the pull this show has. We just say, hey, let's get Paul on, and it happens. We'll talk to Paul Feinbaum next. Darren, Donica, Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
All them dogs are counting down, about to put the anchor down. Hotty toddy, who's it going to be? Cowbells and swamp.
Oh, you know what that music means. Yeah, 2 to 6, every day Monday through Friday, Paul Feinbaum Show. And Paul now joins us. He's brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good morning, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, guys. How are you?
Well, we had an interesting first segment discussion that we said, this has got to roll right into Paul. I mean, this is right up his alley, and this is just my belief, and you can tell me if I'm off my rocker. It won't be the first time somebody has said that, or if I'm on to something. I don't believe for a minute. One, I don't think Nick Saban can be on site. Even if they have him isolated somewhere, I don't believe that's a possibility. I don't think you can risk having him on site. So if Nick Saban can't be a part of this game remotely, virtually, however you want to phrase it, if he can't be a part of this game against Georgia somehow, some way, I don't believe for a minute the SEC plays this game. I believe we're going to be talking about a rescheduled date. Crazy, or am I on to something?
You know, I am a talk show host and not an accredited, licensed psychiatrist, so I always hate to call somebody crazy.
But
I think you are. you're right about part of that. If he tests positive again, he'll be tested every day, and unless all of a sudden he goes three straight negative tests, he won't be at the game. And if he's not at the game, he won't be part of it. I mean, the rules are pretty strict. Now, do they apply to him? That's another story. But I think the danger of calling the game off are manyfold, starting with the fact it's the biggest game of the year in college football. What means more than almost anything else? Money. And the game's in prime time on CBS. And I know you can say, well, you could reschedule the game on December 12th and have just as much effect. But maybe you can't, because if it turns out that, that we miss a bunch of games or we miss a few games and Alabama and Georgia are already penciled in for the SEC title game on December 19th, do you really want to see the game the week before as well?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You also need to leave some buffer because, you know, already this week, you guys know it better than anyone. We've seen two games go down. And I don't think there's any danger of not having enough players for this game, frankly. I don't think that's really an issue at all. It could be the issue could be on the Alabama coaching staff. And I think that's where I would concentrate right now. You know, all you have to do is watch the video of last Saturday night's game. I mean, Nick Saban was in the face of Pete Golding, the defensive coordinator for now, the entire night. Masked or no masked. So he's in close contact with his staff even more so than his team. So I'm curious to see that. And quite frankly, I don't say this jokingly. I say this very seriously. I think most everyone on the Alabama team has already had COVID.
Hmm. Well, we've been talking about this with you, right, for weeks. Like, when is it? It's not if. It's when it hits the SEC. And unfortunately, here in our market, I feel like we've been talking about too much COVID news, whether it's the Titans, Nashville SC, and now Vanderbilt being postponed. But I did want to ask you then, with that being said, then when you look, Paul, you know, we brought up the Hugh Freeze, and I know it's a different scenario where I don't remember if he had the knee surgery, hip surgery, whatever. He was laid up. He couldn't walk the sidelines. He couldn't stand on the sidelines. They had him propped up in a hospital bed somewhere. But we've learned, as you know, from your employer, ESPN, SEC Network, they've called games remotely. Our own Willie Donick has called Predator playoff games this year remotely. And I did a pregame, postgame for the Predators through the playoffs remotely here at the house. So we're doing press conferences remotely. We're doing things we never thought we would ever do in 2020. So I guess the question is, if you want the game to go on as planned, then why can't they figure out a way and let him be a part of the game remotely? Why not? We're doing everything else remotely.
I think it has more to do with some protocols and rules. They may be NCAA rules. I've heard all this today. I must tell you, every time I'm on a program with somebody and they start quoting NCAA bylaws, I just like tune out. So I heard part of it earlier today that the NCAA precludes it, and I think the SEC subscribes to that in terms of the 2020 COVID protocols. So I think that's it. Now, do we think that there's a possibility that Nick Saban is not going to be communicating somehow? Yes, I believe it. As you already pointed out, I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, the most nervous guy in the world would probably be the IT guy at Saban's house Saturday night,
right,
making sure that the Wi-Fi is working, because we've all been through it. I mean, I've done shows early in the shutdown, and a guy cut my cable on my street. So
oh,
I mean,
no.
All of a sudden, it happens. I mean, Tom Hart last week on the SEC
yes.
Network game
yes.
in Atlanta. His power went out. I mean, so
Jordan Rodgers was doing the play-by-play.
Yeah, but one thing I can guarantee everyone in the area, however, whatever communication Nick Saban is using, legally or illegally, it won't go down Saturday night.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum. So, Paul, Chase brought this up when because I was watching your discussion this morning on Get Up about all this stuff, and Chase brought up the example of wasn't there a game where Hugh Freeze at Liberty was
yep.
in a hospital recovering from an injury and somehow was dialed in? If he could do that, is that separate? Is that different? Or is that,
yeah,
this is something?
I think so. Yeah, it was either surgery or some reaction. Anyway, he was pretty sick. I remember talking to him about it. It looked like about to go have his wisdom teeth taken out. But the difference then was, I mean, we weren't talking about a global pandemic where, you know, the rules specifically or, you know, preclude you from doing it. So I think that's the difference here. And I'm sure, you know, I interviewed Greg Sankey yesterday, and I didn't push him too hard because, the story was literally just breaking. But, you know, optically, you know, having Saban, who whether he's asymptomatic or not, it's still, he could conceivably be highly contagious. It would just be a very bad look in front of, you know, 10 or 15 million people. But, yeah, I'm now to the point where I don't think anyone really cares what the optics on anything look like. I mean, Dan Mullen, you know, he's had a great week. You know, he recommends that Florida pack the swamp with 89,000 people. And then 3 days later, his game, the game that he wanted packed, gets canceled. And that was three different times he refused to walk it back. And then yesterday, he acknowledged that, yeah, some of his players had the sniffles on Friday, but, you know, he didn't think it was a big deal. Now, 7 months to the day that we've been into this, the sniffles could indicate a lot if you're paying close attention.
Paul, another thing that you guys covered this morning was a really interesting question down the road, and this is what makes sports talk fun, and that would be if this scenario goes forward as we think it will, and Nick Saban is not a full participant in the game, how would that potentially affect a discussion that could be very real, considering Georgia and Alabama could be considered for a playoff? The committee would have a lot of fun with that one.
Yeah, and I don't want to you know, encourage people not to watch Saturday night. Everyone's going to watch. But I don't think this game is really that important. And I know that sounds like a dramatic statement, but, you know, assuming this is a reasonably close game, the loser is still alive, no matter how you slice it. It's probably better for Alabama to win, but because it's a home game. But, you know, if it's 35-34 and they meet again in Atlanta and the result is the other way, there's still a reasonably good chance both teams will get in. So I don't think the Saban factor is that important, unless it's just a disaster. And, you know, let's say Georgia goes in there and wins 35-7, and then you could argue, and I'm sure it would, that, you know, not having the greatest coach in the game, you know, had a deleterious effect on Alabama. But, you know, but it will not determine the SEC. It's a great game, but it's the fourth week of the season.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum from ESPN and the SEC Network. And obviously the loser of this game that we're talking about is going to join the one-loss group. But when you look at the one-loss teams right now in the SEC, whether it's Auburn or Tennessee, Texas A&M, and, of course, Florida being a part of that, is there one that stands out to you that makes you think, all right, you've seen enough that they can hang with the big boys to possibly compete for the SEC title?
Yeah, I'd still have to go with Florida right now. And again, their defense is pretty bad, but I could go down the list of SEC teams and probably add about 10 or 12 more to that group. Right now, Georgia's the only defense that looks spectacularly good. And yeah, to me, Florida was probably going to beat LSU this weekend, and, you know, whether they'll beat them at the end of the year remains to be seen, but I think they're in the best shape. A&M is good. That was a huge win, but I don't think they can be consistent enough. And Tennessee was fairly disappointing in the second half. It looked like they just lost composure, and you know, it made us wonder what we've been wondering now for a long time: is Jared Garantano the right quarterback?
Yeah, and EME, I should have said, besides Florida, because obviously they're in that group. Did Ole Miss show you enough that Lane Kiffin is going to at least get that program to a respectable level before the season is over, outside of their defense?
No doubt. And you know, I know what the final score was, but that game was one bad snap away from maybe going into overtime. What was so remarkable was the fact that Lane Kiffin just out-schemed Alabama all night long. And the Alabama, you know, Saban has not had a good week. Saban after the game insinuated that Kiffin had stolen the signals, which, you know, it would be ridiculous. The fact that Kiffin hasn't been on the staff since 2016, that they were still using the same signals. But if you watch the game and you know anything about Ole Miss, they call the plays at the line of scrimmage, as the previous play is ending. So it wouldn't matter if you had the playbook; they were that fast and that good. But they don't have a defense either. I mean, their defense, you know, may be the worst in the SEC or college football for that matter. But they will beat teams. They won't win every week, but they will be entertaining.
Did I see the stat right that was the first time a Mike Leach coach team had ever not had an offensive touchdown, offensive score?
I think you're right. And you know, I know a lot of people are saying, I told you so, but this is the Mike Leach show we've all loved for his career. I mean, he did this at Texas Tech 5 times.
Yep.
He beat a top 10 team or top 20 team and then lost the next week. I mean, Mike Leach is just inconsistent. And, you know, I'm still not sure what happened. I mean, I think what happened was they played LSU, and LSU's defense was badly outmanned the whole night too. So I mean, I know that sounds like I've said that about 5 teams, but the SEC is starting to look like the Big 12.
Yeah, defense has not been their strong suit to this point for sure. Paul, always appreciate the visits. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
A pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Good stuff, as always. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We've got your coverage for MLB playoffs presented by Gary Force Acura. Tonight on 102.5 The Game, Game 4 NLCS Series. Braves will have to pick themselves up off the mat. After yesterday.
On to the next one.
Well, on to the Dodgers. Well, that's who they just played. So
I said on to the next one.
Okay.
Next game.
How you feeling there, frisky fella? Probably not as frisky today, huh?
No, I mean, they got their ass kicked. What do you want me to say?
No, Kyle Wright got his brains beat in yesterday.
Oh, man.
Holy moly.
I felt so bad. I wanted to watch the game. I was watching a movie. It wasn't even a great movie.
What were you watching?
Oh, I can't even remember the name of it. You ever just flip on a random?
Yes, no, that's why I'm asking.
You flip channels, and somehow, some way, a movie catches you for a minute. And you just start. You get up and walk. So I wasn't into it every second. I was walking around doing stuff, but I was following the movie, and it was almost over. I was like, I'll just watch the end of this and then flip over the Braves game. So I can't even tell you what the name of the movie is. I'll find it.
I just did that. That's the reason I was asking.
Okay.
Do you know movie it was?
I missed 25 pitches, and it was 6-0.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I missed 25 pitches.
The minute you blinked, if you went to the bathroom, you were toast. The game was over. Yeah. I mean, what was it, 11-0 after one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and then it became 12-0, and then it spiraled from there. And
what, 15 after two? Is that right?
Yeah, 15-3 the final.
Do you know what that movie was for me?
Chase, I want
you to be thinking about it. I literally just did that, and I've got several. And I've caught myself, and I've made a mental note, like, don't ever waste your time. Don't do that again. Like, that was a terrible movie. But the most recent one for me was The Fighter, Mark Wahlberg, who usually is in fantastic movies. I thought it was the cheesiest boxing movie I had ever seen in my entire life. Have you guys even seen it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
It wasn't very good.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sitting there shaking my head, but it was one of those, I've gone this far, like I got to see it through just to never, ever do it again. It was the cheesiest boxing movie ever. And like I said, Mark Wahlberg usually is in really good stuff. I enjoy his movies for the most part. I mean, you know, it's not like he's never had a dud, but this one was a dud. And it was also Christian Bale. I mean, it's like the cast gets your attention, right? And it's like, ugh.
I didn't realize it was that bad.
The cast was phenomenal, and it's like, ugh.
I remember when that movie came out, it had a lot of hype.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize it was a dud. Mine was a movie I'd never heard of. It was the theme was kind of like a cable guy, but not a comedy. Remember the movie Cable Guy, where the guy just comes into your life and then crosses the line, and you
cable
can't get rid
guy.
Of him. These were two women. There was an older woman that was looking for like a daughter in her life, and she just became a Klingon, a stage 5 Klingon. This wasn't a comedy, though. This was kind of a thriller because she becomes kind of a stalker and it gets crazy. And so what the worst part for me was I flip over to the game and it's 6-0. And then I missed the I missed the end of the movie. So I got
that was a double whammy.
Double whammy. It's the woman's name is the name of the movie and I can't remember it. I'll have to go back and look up. It's like and it wasn't a big cast, so I can't even look up the names of the actors and actresses that were in it. So I'm out of luck. But Kyle Wright, I thought this was what well, I thought was good.
Am I going to answer the question about the movies?
By the way, it was it's Stage 5 Klinger, just so you know.
You're not a Klingon. Klingon's a Klinger.
I was just saying, were you quoting Star Trek or something? Yeah. I think it's you got my Stage 5 Klinger.
You can see how I get Wedding Crashers and Star Trek mixed together.
What a mashup.
That's a great mashup.
I thought you were more of a Star Wars, not Star Trek.
I am. Definitely more. Star Wars.
Mine was the latest Rambo movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I
haven't watched it.
Rambo Last Blood.
Okay. So no good?
No.
Last Blood?
Is it Stallone?
Yeah, it's Stallone.
Last Blood? I didn't even know that existed. I thought that was like a joke when you said
it. Well, because the first Rambo was actually called First Blood. And so
right.
That's how they,
oh, believe me. I know.
That's
I know.
How they ended it. And I'm like, oh, cool. Stallone, Rambo. I love the Rambo movies. I mean, the one that came out about 10 years ago I thought was great. I mean, if you like just, action-packed movies like he's known to do. And this one was just, I mean, the storyline was okay, but it was boring. Like, it was just, it took too long to get to, when I watch a movie like that, I just want to watch him beat up people. And that was all towards the end. It just took a very long time to kind of build up the plot. So, It was one of those that I, about halfway, not even halfway through, but about 20 minutes in, I'm like, this isn't going to be very good. But
dude, how old is Sly? He's got to be 70, right? He's got to be.
Oh.
How old is Stallone?
I would almost lean towards 75.
I mean, when you say you just want to see him beat up, like, I don't want to see it. It's like the Fonz. I don't want to see him.
74.
Where? Oh, my. 74.
And he looks bad. He just looks awful.
Do you think he's ever
Sly though?
Enhancements
we like Sly.
Over the years. Yeah. Do you ever think he's ever been on anything? Possibly, maybe.
Possibly.
Like, I don't think his face moves anymore. He's had surgeries.
There's no doubt. But I mean, he may have some needles in the buttocks over the years. May have had some of that.
You think?
Hey, let's go easy on Possibly. Sly. Though. Let's go easy on Sly. Willie's, we like
I think
Sly.
Willie is getting a little uncomfortable.
Willie's like guys, but you're right. Guys.
Do not talk about Stallone. No, do not say that about Stallone.
Because I'm still at heart. Rocky 1 still is
that
one
was
of the greatest.
Like 40
one
years
of the greatest
ago,
ever.
Willie,
and I will say this. First Blood is good.
Rambo,
the first
once
one.
Once again, that's
still,
like 35
we're still good.
Years ago.
We're still good, right? Rambo, like Chase said, just action, craziness. Rambo is still in the ballpark. Then Rambo 3, it's that we got to drop off. And now anything after that, it's like, I'm not watching. I just don't want to ruin my image of First Blood.
By the way, First Blood was almost 40 years ago.
Can you believe that? We're all getting old.
It's older than Chase.
Yeah. Oh, of course it is. Yeah, because Rambo 3 came out the year after I was born in 88.
Yeah, we all went right after school to go watch that one, like first day it came out in high school.
Now, did you see Rambo?
Came out of there going, eh. Yeah.
Did you see in 2008 they came out with, it was just called Rambo, and he was retired at that point, but that was a good movie.
I was going to say, I thought that one got good reviews.
I
That's
liked
not
that
the one you're talking about?
No, the one I'm talking about came out at the end of last year.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, Rambo Last Blood is what...
Last Blood? This is a terrible name for a movie.
Yeah, but Rambo, just called Rambo, and this is so confusing because everybody calls First Blood Rambo 1, and then... But it's not.
Well, it's called First Blood Part 2. It's Rambo First Blood Part 2 is the sequel to the original.
And then Rambo 3. And then Rambo. And then Rambo Last Blood.
we've just gone completely off the rails. We started talking about the Braves, didn't we?
Yes.
We did.
By the way,
did you see who the White Sox are interviewing? Speaking of baseball?
And guys in their mid-70s?
Yeah, so you have seen it, yes.
Who are they interviewing? I haven't seen
Tony
this.
La Russa. Wait a minute. He's supposed to be helping Nashville get an MLB team. What is he doing?
I think, what happened first? First Blood or Tony La Russa's first managing job for the White Sox? It's about the same.
Yeah.
It's pretty close. It's almost
pretty
the same year.
Close. Yeah.
I mean, it might be the same year. What year? Let's take a look. That could be a perfect way to get us off the rails and back on track, is if it happened in the same year. It's within a year.
Very close.
Tony La Russa was what, 82? Took over the White Sox, or 81?
Let's find out.
I got it right here.
Oh, okay. I got it too. 79.
And First Blood came out what year?
82.
Oh, gosh, we're so close.
See, wow. I obviously was not around for the White Sox era, but I remember him with the A's and the Cardinals, but totally forgot he was
La Russa's 76.
And this brings up another question of when the Nashville Stars bring in this team of people, how much time are they spending on the end game of getting a team to Nashville when Tony La Russa's clearly about could take another managerial position, which would be amazing at his age. And then Dave Dombrowski, you know, was rumored right away to be possibly interested or, you know, wanted the Angels were interested in him, might be the best way to put it, as their GM. It just makes me wonder, what does that do to the Nashville group that they've put together, all these impressive names? I guess they're impressive enough to be courted by other teams, but what does that do to the cause in the meantime?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what their daily activities are.
Yeah, I know. That's what we're all wondering, right?
I have no idea.
But somebody has to move the ball, right, on a daily basis in some form.
Yeah, I don't know what their daily activities are. My guess is they all have day jobs.
That's what I mean. But if that's the case, then
I think they're Stars is moonlighting,
right? But if that's the case, then all that this is just a concept in people's minds, and some people that have a similar cause. But somebody's got to do the work, right? Who's doing the work?
I think they've
maybe
been
somebody
doing
is.
Some work. I mean, you don't have renderings. You don't hire people. You don't have press conferences. You don't do interviews if you're not doing some work. I mean, they've named the team. I mean, there has been work done, but you're talking about the big work. I mean, there's still big work to be done, like securing land.
Well, that's a great example.
There's that.
And I think we learned on our show that the renderings, there's only been one rendering to my knowledge,
yes,
right? And that rendering is obsolete and no longer applicable.
Yeah, but
that
rendering's
not gonna happen.
To get any true work done, you're going to have to get – I mean, it's like you got to find a dance partner. The city has to go, yeah, we're interested. And so far, I don't think that's really been the case.
True.
No, I think they've been focused on
getting
a soccer stadium built.
We've got a lot of things going.
A tie on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says two things. Thanks for not muting. They got their bleep kicked. There's no better way to put it. They're going to hire A.J. Hinch, talking about the Nashville Stars.
A.J. Hinch might get hired by somebody. He's being looked at by a lot of teams. Maybe Alex Cora, too. But let's get back to the Braves for a minute. I did admire this.
Yeah, let's do that. Chase, your thoughts.
Well, Chase, before you give your thoughts, I do want to point out.
I was
going to say, he doesn't have John, any. That was a joke.
Well, we need to talk about today, too, because, as you said, you're right back out there. And Kershaw is able to pitch, and you're facing Bryce Wilson. So this is a really interesting pitching matchup because on paper it looks like, you know, you've got the all-time Hall of Famer who has had his issues in the playoffs, of course, against a relative unknown who is a good prospect and highly touted but has barely scratched the surface. So what an intriguing pitching matchup, first of all. But I do want to point out how Kyle Wright handled himself after the game, because that was pretty admirable. I mean, he got, as you said, Chase, I won't repeat what you said, but, I mean, it wasn't his day. He got absolutely – those weren't cheapies he gave up, right? Those were rockets, one after another, and it was a TK. It was Michael Spinks against Mike Tyson.
90 you know, seconds.
The 91 seconds. Boom, you're gone. And John Smoltz was referring to it throughout the rest of the game, if you tortured yourself enough to watch some of it, which I did. And he said, it's like you're sitting there in the dugout going, what just happened? You can't believe your day is over that quick. And, you know, if you pitch long enough, it will happen to you at some point. And he had that dazed look. John Smoltz said, this is what I would do if I were a leader on the Braves. I would go to Kyle Wright and say, Kyle, turn the page. we can't win this thing without you. And so just throw the tape in the trash. I thought that was a really interesting piece of advice. I completely agree with the – I just love the first part of it. We can't win this thing without you. So don't go, woe is me. We need you. And we're not worried about it. We're turning the page. We're still up 2-1. But Kyle, right after
the
game, when he got grilled, oh, yeah, they don't have anybody else. And that, so that's the point. But then Kyle, right after the game, when he said, are you just trying to forget about this? He said, no, I want to learn from what happened here. And I'll do whatever I've got to do. I've only thrown 30 pitches. If they need to bring me back and they need me, I will do whatever I need to do for this team. I just thought that was a really good handling of adversity and showing some professionalism, some makeup. I just think that's going to shine through for him at some point, whether it's in this series or down the road.
The Titans have some IR news and some activation and COVID news. We'll tell you about that to wrap up the first hour. Floyd Reese to begin the second hour right here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Wondering why we ended Paul Feinbaum a little bit early, but not really. But we did because if you turn on First Take right now, he's on First Take. So he kind of had to run to do some television duties. But we still had a very good discussion with him. Remember, that's every Thursday at 10:15. We also talk every Thursday at 11 o'clock with the GM. Floyd Reese will kick off the next hour. We'll also hear from Predators GM David Poile. Third hour is going to be Silly Underdog Picks. So we've got a loaded Thursday show. There's some news on the Titans front in the last 15, 20 minutes. The Titans have activated Big Jeff, Jeffrey Simmons. He has been activated from the COVID reserve list. Also, they have designated for return safety Dane Cruikshank. And it looks like they will have a designation that will open up a 3-week window for Cruikshank to practice with the team. But he will not count against the 53-man roster. Also, they have placed running back Darrington Evans on IR. He is eligible to return to the active roster after 3 games. I'll say what I said yesterday. I saw really good things in the very, very limited time that we saw him on Tuesday night. It looks good. It looks promising in a very, very small window. But my biggest fear right now is this a sign of things to come where Darrington Evans is always banged up in the NFL? Hope not. But so far in his very young career, he has spent more time in the tub than he has been on the field.
Yeah, I have some concerns on that too. It's obviously early, so you wanna kind of give it the benefit of the doubt, and let's see if this is just, bad luck and this is what he's dealing with. But I do have that concern as well. Is he going to be available? Because they need him to be. I mean, we saw the other night, once he wasn't, they went to McNichols, and McNichols had 9 carries on the night. I mean, they were trying to mix it up. They were trying to, I don't know if they were necessarily trying to give Derrick Henry, some time off, but I think they were trying to mix it up because they need that skill set out of the backfield that Darrington Evans is supposed to provide. And he wasn't available to him. So it's definitely something that I'm not ready to start panicking on, but it's a concern that you need to monitor.
Also, the Titans did make a move, and they did find a trading partner, which did surprise me. I did not think they were going to be able to do that. And Kamale Correa, has his trade request has been granted. He has been sent to Jacksonville. And along with a seventh-round pick, and in return, the Titans get a sixth-round pick. So they give up a 7 and Correa, and they get a 6 in return. Are you guys surprised they were able to get a trading partner?
I am a little bit surprised, pleasantly surprised. I'm happy for him because he's going to get a chance to prove that he was just, pushed out and he can still play. So good for him. But the Titans essentially, I guess, move up. Like they gave up a 7th to get a 6th. Mm-hmm. So I forget what the net result
player
is.
And the player they were going to cut anyway. So
right. So yeah. They get something. They get they get something. That's good.
Something.
Tom Brady was a 6th round pick, as we've said a million times before.
Didn't they give up a sixth to get him initially?
They gave up a seventh to get a sixth.
Seventh, yeah.
It was Correa and a seventh.
No. I'm talking about when they acquired him.
Oh, when
him
they first
from
got him. Yeah. It was a sixth or a seventh. I don't remember. From Baltimore.
I feel like it was a sixth. But nonetheless, he got his wish. And it's like I said yesterday, if he doesn't want to be here, then okay, we'll move on. And they got, you know, they got something for him. So I think that. You have to look at that and go, all right, if now you got 2-6 and he's happier because he's going elsewhere, then everybody wins.
What do we think went wrong there? Why do you think that they weren't using him?
Well, when they signed him to a 1-year deal, they had just brought in Beasley. Clowney wasn't in the picture yet.
He was pretty darn good in the playoffs last year.
He was. But I mean, let's be honest. Clowney has not, you know, lit it up like everybody had hoped. I think he's definitely made a difference. He's gotten pressures, but
I thought he was impactful Tuesday night.
I thought he was too. But if you're the Titans or any NFL team for that matter, and you have Clowney available, who are you going to take? Clowney or Kamale Correa? No offense to Kamale Correa, but he's not Jadeveon Clowney. And so when they re-signed him, they had brought in Beasley, and Correa was going to come in and essentially be, you know, in the same role that he had been, be, you know, that role player, that depth player. Well, then Jadeveon Clowney comes on the roster and he moves down the depth chart. So that's what I think happened. It's just they didn't have room for him. They didn't need him.
I feel like Vic Beasley has had zero impact on this roster.
I've barely noticed him.
Zero.
I forgot he was part of the mix.
That has been to this point, that has been an absolute dud signing.
But you knew, I think I had come to grips as training camp unfolded and they had all the issues getting him on the field. We had the commentary from Chris Domino. I set my bar low, and I was saying, if this guy can give him anything later in the season, great. But I guess it's fair to say they think Beasley is an upgrade from Correa. And what's interesting about Correa is even when Beasley wasn't available, and Roberson wasn't available, and they only had, what, 3 outside linebackers on the roster, and he was one of them. They still didn't play him very much, right? So they must have seen a drop-off somewhere from the playoffs last year, where, as you guys pointed out, he was a factor, right? He was doing some nice things. So that's where it went south, somewhere.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, him being in the Dean Pease system, even though it hasn't changed all that much, I think that was certainly a benefit for him because he had played for Dean in Baltimore and then played for him here. So I just wonder if there was some issues with the transition of what they were trying to do. But I don't know. Again, I go back to if he's unhappy and doesn't want to be here. I mean, think about when Martin Erat asked for a trade from the Predators. I mean, we were all a little surprised by that, but David Poile's like, okay, fine. I need people that are going to want to be here and be a part
of
it.
Well, I don't know. He wasn't that way at first. He actually did try to talk him out of it, which is interesting. We covered this yesterday, right? There are two. You really find out what the relationship's like and how the team feels about you based on the response, because there are certain times, and this was one where David Poile said, "Why don't we just table it until the off season and then we'll talk about it." And Erat insisted and said, "No, I really want to go. I want to get and so." Good for the Predators. It worked out, right?
Fantastic.
Worked out as the best that could ever possibly work out.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I mean, sometimes that's the best thing that could happen, right? I mean, and so we'll see. Maybe this is a win-win. I think it's already a win for the Titans. They got something for nothing. I mean, they were going to just let him go, and so they weren't going to get anything. Now the question is it turn out to be a win for Jacksonville where they can, you know, use Correa and he can help them a little bit. All right, we'll come back. We'll ask the GM some questions to start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. Floyd Reese next, ESPN 102.5 The Game.